This is no ordinary pod. No ordinary pod.
And that's the voice of Noah Hemer, who is relieved from finals week being over. You know, he has a week off until school starts right back up. But I could feel the relieving when you were singing your own version of Sade's No Ordinary Love. It was gorgeous, Noah.
Thank you. It is I had my last final this morning at 7:30, which was kind of lame because I literally was there for 15 minutes and then left. So kind of sucks to have to be up that early just for a 15-minute test. But we're done. Grades are looking solid. So on comes melting season in Tallahassee and summer classes.
Oh, man, the humidity's crazy up there. And I should say, this is No Ordinary Pot on the Radio St. Pete Network as well. I should make that known. Shout out to Radio St. Pete community as always. But you're feeling great. I'm feeling great. Got some personal stuff, personal wins. Although if my team Liverpool had a very, very tough loss yesterday against Barcelona. Yesterday. We're recording this Thursday evening at 6:50. Normal people time. This isn't a 1:45 in the morning recording. But energy levels are good. We have football to talk about. This could be the last time we get to talk about have the NFL create news for us itself. And that is, we have the NFL draft. We're going to recap that. Go over the Bucs draft. Go over our favorite matches. I know you want to talk about Daryl Henderson to the Rams, as probably as I do. But before we get to that, a player who's probably been one of the three most talked about players on this podcast, right behind Kirk Cousins. Shout out Kirk. Vikings didn't drop the quarterback to push Kirk Cousins. They had so many. They had Daniel Jones. Oh, that's his name, right? Yeah, Daniel Jones. They could have done so much more. But kudos to them for drafting the O-lineman. We're not going to talk about the Vikings. We're talking
at least
about,
not yet.
We'll try not to. We'll try. We're going to keep positivity in this podcast. But we're going to talk about your boy, Josh Rosen, who was traded to the Miami Dolphins. Has a home now. Feels good. There were some. Did you see Steve Smith's rant about Josh Rosen?
I did.
I didn't listen to it. I didn't feel like the need to listen to it because I'm not someone who wants to listen to those rants anyway. But what were your thoughts, very quickly, before we go into the dynamics of Josh Rosen, the Dolphins draft as in general, and what they're doing and how they're doing the Astroball method, not Moneyball, Astroball method, which is a new book, came out this year, written by Ben Reeder. I recommend reading that if you want to understand how teams are going to be built moving forward analytically and combining analytically with the gut feeling. I'm going to gush about it all the time. Before we get into that, what are your thoughts on Steve Smith ranting, saying, oh, he unfollowed him on Instagram, he should have stayed and competed for his job? What are your thoughts on that? Because I assume you're a Steve Smith fan, like most diehard football fans are.
Yes. It was tough to listen to, because if you are even a relatively decent listener to the pod, to the No Ordinary Pod, you know how much I love Rosen, and Steve Smith is a baller. One of those few technician receivers that could play and could keep playing at a high level for a really long time. But he kind of went on a tangent about how, you know, like you said, Rosen could have stayed and competed, this and that, yada, yada, yada. But I thought it was kind of short-sighted, because it wasn't necessarily in Josh Rosen's hands if he was going to get the opportunity to compete. And afterwards, you know, they talked about the I lost my train of thought.
It's all good. We keep rolling here. We let mistakes come out. You're talking Rosen was out of his hands, the whole scenario with that.
Yeah, he just... I listened to the press conference for Josh Rosen, mm-hmm. and they asked him about, you know, how he would have felt about having the opportunity to compete and whatnot, and I read in a Sports Illustrated article on it, and he goes, I would have had no problem competing, and I would have tried my best to beat him out, but if you draft a guy 1 year, and then the next year you draft a guy at the first overall pick... You're just never – that the original guy they drafted is never going to get a legitimate shot, because if he wins the starting job, it is just going to prove to the GM that he made a mistake twice.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it.
And that's what Josh Rosen said. And I was like, that's wise, and it's true. So he was like, I would have stayed. I would have tried to compete for the team. I would have done what I've had to do, but I don't think I would have been given a fair shake. And that's just the reality of it, which I agree.
When there was a sliver of doubt that Kyler Murray was not going to go play baseball, the Cliff Kingsbury hype just escalated so much, because there's the Kingsbury clip I take in one overall. He runs an air raid offense. He runs, and Kyler Murray's one of the most perfect air raid system quarterbacks that we've seen as a prospect. And the Cardinals invested three or four top 100 picks on offensive capital. So it's clear they were going in that direction. So the whole Steve Smith, stay and compete thing, like, I feel like that's just for TV's sake. I know he's passionate. I know Steve Smith's not the type of guy to do that. But it seemed like it was more just I'm creating a story, creating something, than talking about the player. And then Josh Rosen, he had a great statement. Everyone's like, oh, this is the guy you said was whining and stuff. Josh Rosen never publicly whined. He just unfollowed a team on social media. And that's a problem with social media, is that it creates some, people are searching like, oh, if he followed players from this team, he must be going there. Like Antonio Brown and George Kittle follow each other. And everyone's like, oh, he must be pushing for a trade for the 49ers. It's just childish stuff. It's the media creating a story. But hey, it is what it is. But besides that, the trade was the Chris Greer, the general manager for the Miami Dolphins, got an early 2020 draft pick from the New Orleans Saints in a second round trade down, and then flipped the Saints' original pick, which is second overall, and a 2025th to the Cardinals for Josh Rosen.
And also, I'll add to that, the Miami was smart because the 62nd overall pick, that second round pick, was not their original second overall pick. Mm-mm. That's a late second round. They traded back from their original second round pick to 262. And so they also picked up a little bit more capital, but still traded a second round pick.
They're getting so many assets. They're doing such smart things because teams are finally getting smarter where, it's a first round pick. Well, if you're trading a 31, like the Seahawks have done this for years, they trade 31 and they have like 38 and 39 or 40 and 41. Like they get those two picks. The Colts traded back. They had 3 second round picks. And if you are good at evaluating talent down your board, you're going to get the players you want, especially in the plug and play system. Like they got Paris Campbell late in the second round. I'm pretty sure they got him in the second round. And he's the player that fits exactly what they want to do. They're going to expand his route tree. So it's brilliant from the Colts. And it's now I'm starting to see the Dolphins do this. Because the Dolphins just kept, hey, we're going to keep trading back. We're going to keep getting these picks and all that stuff. Because we're not going to be aiming to compete this year. Which means we're not going to be tanking. Although everyone seems that they're going to finish in dead last in the NFL. But they're establishing a culture. And before I let you take the floor, and if you like what they're doing, I'm going to look at their whole draft as a whole, besides Rosen and stuff like that. Minkah Fitzpatrick, Christian Wilkins. Two of the most decorated college football players in recent time. Two leaders. Two very talented players they've got in the... I think they picked 12 last year. They picked 13th this year. They got two solid players. And they got an offensive lineman starter, Michael Jeter, out of Wisconsin, right away. So everything that they're doing makes sense. And now they have a quarterback where, let's say Rosen doesn't pan out. Depending on how you feel about Tua from Alabama, I can't pronounce his last name, Tagovailoa. Hopefully that's right, close to it. You can draft him. You like Justin Herbert? You can draft him. Or say Rosen pans out and you have the top number three pick. Now you're in a situation where those teams, maybe the Bucks, the Patriots, all these teams that have a lot. There's a lot of the Broncos. They have Drew Lock, but you never know if Drew Lock's going to pan out. They have all these people where they're going to try to trade up, and they're going to get even a bigger haul moving forward. So what are your thoughts on the draft today? Because I'm looking at this, and everyone's saying they all had, except Mel Kiper and a couple, but they had A-minus draft for what they did.
I actually really liked what Miami did, and I read a Sports Illustrated article, it was a different Miami beat writer article today talking about how people should be more excited about Rosen and the potential he gives you. And this is the scenario they brought up, and I actually really like it. Last year, that Arizona Cardinals team was wildly under-talented, extremely under-coached, and they just looked sloppy, and they played sloppy. Josh Rosen was thrown into a situation where not many quarterbacks are going to succeed, let alone a rookie quarterback. They had a stat in there that he had the quickest time in terms of like how much time before he got sacked. He had the fastest time in the NFL, was 32 out of 32. So had the worst offensive line in that sense. He's essentially going to be going into a Miami situation that's eerily similar. They're not saying that they're tanking, but they are tanking because they're just trying to pick up as much capital as they can for the draft. They did not splash all that heavily in free agency in terms of trying to go signing any bigger names to help their team. Finally, were just content. Yeah, it was smart. Just kind of be like, all right, this is where we're at. We need to clean slate before we start building back up, which is smart. But if you only give Josh Rosen a year to evaluate him and truly make an opinion on him, that's not technically fair, on the sense that if you look at what Josh Rosen did last year, and it's not pretty in terms of stats. It wasn't pretty all the time in terms of play either, because one of your favorite stats is yards per attempt, mm-hmm. and his was not where you want it to be. Because he was checking down a lot because he was having pressure in his face. And so he's like, all right, I just got to get the ball out so I don't get smacked right now. But this is what they proposed. Give him 1 year, okay? And let's say they end up with the number one overall pick, but they stick with Rosen. Let's say he does well enough to be like, all right, we'll give Rosen one more year. Because he still is on a rookie deal.
Do you think he's going to beat out Fitzpatrick? Do you think they're going to give the franchise to Rosen? Right, this year.
I don't know.
I feel like they have to.
I think at least by the end of the season, the last 6-7 games, it'll be all Rosen the entire time.
On a pure evaluation standpoint. I don't think Fitzpatrick's the best quarterback to be in the – I love Fitzpatrick, but that guy's a gunslinger. And you could see Jameis has always been turnover prone, but you could just see how much the turnover was just infectious in that QB room last year at the Bucks. So hopefully, Rosen. If honestly for the Dolphins, you need to do a 16-game evaluation on Rosen, because if not, like we're saying, you'll have the number one pick, and if you have Rosen and he's your guy, you can get anything you want. I saw a mock for Todd McShay for 2020. I know it's very early, and there's going to be defensive players always come alive in these mocks and stuff. But there's Jerry Jeudy. The next year's wide receiver class is ridiculous.
Awesome.
You are in a position where you're going to have ample amount of cap room to get defensive talent. You're going to have draft picks. They have one in the first round, two second round picks, a third, two fourths that they got in the Ryan Tannehill trade. They don't have a fifth, two sixths, and two sevenths. It's a lot of capital to move up. Cap space. This could be a quick turnaround. If Rosen's your guy, it's a quick turnaround. Very quickly. So I didn't mean to cut you off on your little rant there, but I'm looking at the transactions. This is just what I'm seeing.
What they proposed was, let's say you do get the number one overall pick in next year's draft, mm-hmm. and let's say you decide not to take a quarterback. You have two options. Either you can get a stud at number one overall in terms of a receiver, maybe a pass rushing guy, a game changer at whatever position kind of floats to the top. Or you can get one of those quarterback needy teams, because there are at least two or three every single year that is going to want to trade up for Tua or for Herbert or whoever ends up being the number one guy, number one quarterback next year. And you
Justin
get
Blackman, bro. James Blackman, bro. Don't laugh.
You never know. You never know.
If you want to draft a string bean.
a giraffe. But let's say you trade back, and let's say you require another 2021 first-round pick in that process. Something like that. and you give Rosen one more year. You pretty much say next year is just kind of like a prep year, and then the year after that, all right, Rosen, this is the chance you have to make it, like to see what you can do. But then at that point, let's say it doesn't go well, you end up, and let's say he gets 8, 9, 10 games in, and it's just not going well, you start maybe buying for that, try to get that number one overall spot towards the end of the season, and that quarterback class is highlighted by Trevor Lawrence.
Yeah. God, he has great hair. He has great hair.
Great hair. And he would be, that great hair would flow beautiful in South Beach.
Oh, man, yeah. Get a nice little, oh, yeah.
Yeah, so imagine just acquiring talent, just building a roster around it, and then getting your guy at quarterback. So either A, you're balling on a rookie quarterback contract for the next 2 years and then some if you decide to stray away from the Rosen situation. Excuse me. But you got essentially a top 10 quarterback from last year's quarterback class, which was loaded, for a 62nd overall pick?
Yeah.
For a steal.
And a 2020 fifth round. And that 62 overall pick was turned into Andy Isabella, a wide receiver from UMass. And his cap remaining, he has 3 years. I'm trying to do the math right now. I wish US they eliminated 2018, but original contract was 4 years, $17.5 million. He's only on the books, dead cap. It'd be a 1.2 cap hit if they wanted to cut him right now. Next year, $2 million. His third year, $2.8 million.
And then which is pocket change.
Yeah, and then 2022, team option. Very, very... This is just such a... We're not used to seeing this from the Dolphins. The guys who signed Sue to the crazy contracts, they just signed a bunch of old players, and now they're finally doing something right. I don't think the Dolphins are going to be as bad as people think. They have a real coaching staff. It's going to be Rosen or Fitzpatrick's team. I still have every single ounce of Devontae Parker stock one could have, although it seems like a lost cause. Kenyon Drake, Kaleem Ballage in the backfield. You have Christian Wilkins. You have Minka Fitzpatrick. Sean Howard. Pretty sure that's his name. Let me double check those names. I don't want to get him wrong. Like, there's talent on this team, and they have a coach now. So it wouldn't shock me if they're not the number one overall. If they're not, let me double check. It's really going to bother me if I got his name wrong. Let me look it up real quick. You know who I'm talking about? Their safety. Or DB.
Miami?
Yeah. Rashad Jones. Oh, gotcha. Yes. That's who it is. Sorry about that. I love what Miami's doing. And that's very weird to say. I have a lot of fins up friends. I'm sure you have some fins up friends in Tallahassee. It seems like Tallahassee's just fin central up there. And they have to be okay with how their team's going right now. A calculated risk in Rosen, which cost you a fifth and a second, yet you already have 2 second rounds for next year. And you already have 2 sevenths and 2 fourths. It's just a brilliant deal from the Dolphins. Any closing thoughts? How do you think he's going to do? I'm going to look up their offense coordinator real quick.
I'm assuming he's going to be playing in a similar. I think they're the old
Chad O'Shea, Patriots quarterbacks coach.
So they're going to be playing in that Patriots system, and I for one would have been a huge fan if the Patriots would have let him sit behind Brady for a year and then taken over. But Brady, we have no idea how long he's going to play.
Patriots drafted Jarrett Stidham, so.
They draft a quarterback almost every year in some capacity. Because they just love those rookie quarterback deals.
Yeah.
Because they know that they can train them to be good enough. So I think he's going to have a shot. You know, people keep saying like, oh, I'm not a big Rosen guy. And I'm just looking at it like, what am I seeing that everyone else isn't? Or what is everyone else seeing that I'm missing? Because I still am so high on him. I think he's given the right opportunity. And I think this adversity is only going to make him better. Because I read an article with his comments in it. And he's like, you know, this is the first... I'm a rich kid, and this is good adversity. You know, this is the first time I've really had to face adversity, and it's going to make me better. He realizes that he needs to come in every single day, be a good teammate, get to know his guys. You know, just it seems as if he's all in on trying to make this work. And he realizes he doesn't. Second opportunities do not fall from the sky and just all of a sudden land in your lap in the NFL. Very rarely do you get such a great second opportunity. Like he said, you don't always get another opportunity to make a first impression. And this is what he has in Miami, mm-hmm. is another opportunity to make a first impression with a new coaching staff. I'm optimistic. I wasn't ecstatic when I saw him go into Miami because there were –
I feel like this is a good way to put it. Barry Jackson is a 27-year Miami Herald veteran who covers South Florida's major sports teams, and he tweeted this out today. Spoken to multiple longtime NFL decision makers, front office execs, this week, and all love the Rosen trade. One told me 7 years ago Tannehill would always be average. He loves Rosen. Says he can take you to the next level if Dolphins construct a good team around him, and this guy is starting to get one over. That's from Barry Jackson. So you're winning over local media, and I just...
And I'm not
a Rosen guy, but this is a perfect situation for him.
Yeah, in hindsight, and it's a perfect situation for Miami. Both of them have nothing. Like, Rosen obviously has everything to lose, but Miami has nothing to lose by letting him, you know, see what he can do. And I really think that they need to give him, they would be doing their due diligence to give him 2 years and not rush into getting a quarterback in next year's draft, because I think it's more valuable to start building a team with using all that draft capital, especially when you already have a young rookie quarterback on a contract. Give him 2 years to prove himself. You're not going to be, more than likely, you're not going to be vying for a playoff spot in 2 years. This is a 3 to 4 year plan that you're aiming for. So give him 2 years. If it doesn't pan out over 2 years, fine. Then reevaluate and get your guy like a Trevor Lawrence. And there are going to be other quarterbacks that are going to be coming out that are going to be starting this year that could be hot commodities. I mean, I hate to throw my Nebraska homage in here, but Adrian Martinez Adrian Martinez will also be a guy that has the potential to be coming out in that 2021 draft, and he'll be a dual threat type of guy. So if it is a dual threat type of guy that you want,
that's 2021 quarterbacks. Right?
Yeah, okay, quarterbacks are getting better in college football because they're starting passing leagues and they're starting to throw the ball more in high school. And they're starting to get better with reading the field. Quarterbacks are just going to continue to get better, in my opinion.
That's starting in Little League, too, because when I was in, it was all running the ball. And then we were the only team my 7th and 8th grade year that ran a spread offense. We were in shotgun, and that was in 7th and 8th grade. And that was in 2006 and 7. 2005 and 6. It's just going to keep going down this road of spread, and quarterbacks getting pampered, and all the rules are being targeted towards the offense. Although defensive pass interference challenging may throw some wrinkles and some stuff, but I think it's a good place to leave the Dolphins. And before we get to our favorite draft picks of the whole draft, let's go to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And it was a very defensive draft. So before people are like, "Oh, our offense like that," I sent you this tweet, Byron Leftwich, our new Bucs offense coordinator. Said this at his press conference. He said he's in Jameis' ear. Jameis has been getting out. Never leaving the facility. Most of his decisions making are the mentality, which he's working on. And the other thing is footwork, sloppy footwork. That's very true, prevalent from Jameis. But he said this about our guy O.J. Howard, and something that you've been saying a lot about the fact that Bruce Arians never had O.J. Howard. And he said this. He's never seen a guy like O.J. Howard. There's not many people like him on this earth. He's trying to figure out how many different ways he can use him because he is a matchup nightmare. And I sent that to you and said, oh, boy. And you said, oh, Lord, we're in for a treat. So, yes, the Bucs did not draft any. They drafted two offensive players. One of them was a kicker, which we will get to. Oh, well, we get to that. But they recognized their weakness, which is the NFL's worst pass defense for a couple years running. And they went all in on their first four picks. So we broke down Devin White. I like, we love the Devin White. They grew on us, although, you know, Josh Allen, but we understand the Devin White pick now. Next, second round, 39 overall, went Sean Bunting, DB at Central Michigan. What are your thoughts on that?
Athletic freak. And that's what he does. He is just an athlete. Good speed, good man to man. Listed at 6'195", so adding not like crazy length or speed, but has a good frame. But I just enjoy adding more and more athletic dudes on our defense, because you can teach athletes what to do, and especially in such an aggressive Todd Bowles defense that runs a lot of, that blitzes heavy, and because they blitz heavy, they go a lot of man to man. So you have to be athletic to be able to cover man to man. Most of the more unathletic or subpar athletes that are good corners in the NFL, they're good at zone, because that's more of a mind game, knowing where to read and knowing where to put your eyes. But when it comes to man to man, you got to have great technique, and you got to be able to move very well, especially with the receivers that have been coming out lately. Receiver talent is about to hit a premium in the NFL.
If it already hasn't, because you and I, like, six different times throughout the season tried to rate our top five receivers, and it kept being different lists every single time.
It's tough, because one week we'll talk about this guy, and then the next week, you know, Julio will go off for a huge game. We're all like, right. Wow, you know, we left Julio off.
Let's do it now.
Things like that. Oh, my God.
Let's do it now.
All right.
Receiver order 6.0. All right. Antonio Brown. I think we disagree, because I think there's three locks.
Between
DeAndre Hopkins, Antonio Brown, Julio Jones. Those are three stone cold locks. And I think four and five are Odell and AJ Green. That's leaving off Michael Thomas, who I love to death. That's Keenan Allen. You'll not meet a bigger Keenan Allen fan this side of Mississippi more than me. I love that guy. But those are my five, and it's chalk, but there's a reason chalk's chalk.
Man.
I'm looking at the top receiving stats from last year. I see your boy Davante Adams. Michael Thomas at the top with catches and stuff like that, and catch percentage. Him and Christian McCaffrey. Well, Christian McCaffrey's different. So, I mean,
I'd probably go not putting them in order, but as a collective, excuse me, my top five. Probably go Antonio, DeAndre. And I say DeAndre because he's literally been, he does not matter who's playing quarterback. DeAndre is going to ball. Nuke. That's the most impressive part about it, is it does not matter if it's Ryan Fitzpatrick or Brock Osweiler or
Kirk Cousins.
Deshaun Watson. Kirk Cousins.
Does not matter.
So Antonio Brown, DeAndre Hopkins.
Okay, two for two.
Odell for me.
Okay, we got three. I can't wait to see Odell with Baker Mayfield. I'm smiling so much. Can they get on Hard Knocks again, please?
They should. They really should. Because there's no other team I really want to have. Either them, or I would love to see John Gruden on Hard Knocks.
Oh, yeah.
Would be so much fun.
You know, it'd be great as well if they went to the Vikings and we got to see how bad of a leader Kirk Cousins is.
Oh, that would make me so happy.
Yeah. All right, you have three. The actor who played Chewbacca died. Oh.
That's devastating.
I'm gonna pour some water out for him. Peter Mayhew, you're the man. All right, sorry. Moment of silence for him.
Yes, please.
All right, continue. Unless you're continuing the moment of silence, by all means.
No, I'm just struggling. I struggle with this all the time. Okay, I'm going to have to throw Julio in there.
Okay, all right. Now we're 4-for-4.
But I think, man, that's tough.
Michael Thomas has Drew Brees. AJ Green has had Andy Dalton.
I know. That's why I have to lean towards AJ Green.
5-for-5. But come on.
If I had to pick with my head, I have to pick AJ Green.
Okay.
If I'm picking with my heart or with a guy that I think has the potential to be even bigger, I would probably go Stephon Diggs.
Okay. This is another Asherball reference. Keep the head and the heart in there. What does your gut say?
It tells me to go Devontae Adams.
Oh. Love it. Then Devontae Adams is your 5. You got to trust your gut.
Yeah. I love Devontae Adams. Like I've said to Helda here before, I was in the training room all during training camp. People would come up to me, hey, who should I draft? I go, it does not matter who you draft, but if you have the chance to get Devontae Adams, literally take him. He will be the number one fantasy receiver. And everyone looked at me like, dude, you're crazy. I'm like, all right, whatever. I'll just enjoy having Devontae Adams on my team.
Yeah.
He finishes the number one fantasy receiver in PPR.
There you go. All right. Back to the Bucks and Sean Bunting. Athletic, not the best competition. He had a pick against Michigan State. He's a ball hawk, which is something the Bucks don't have. We have terrible cover corners and no ball hawks, no turnovers. So we got Bunting, big athletic freak. People in the analytic crowd, when I was looking at that, they loved him. Jamel Dean, another Auburn DB, 6 foot, ran a 4.3 at the combine. Very inconsistent. Getting with the we traded back. We had a higher third round pick. We traded back. Got 94-99 overall. The one we used, because it was compensatory for the third round pick for the second one. The Mike Edwards pick, I love. I love him. I love Kentucky defensive players, A and B. Have we had a guy since Rondae Barber? Not saying Edwards is Rondae Barber at all. Have we had a guy who can play in the slot or the box safety or play over the top? And that's a ball hawk.
No.
And that's what Mike Edwards is.
We haven't had a solid DB since, like, I don't remember the last awesome DB we've had since Rondae Barber. We had Revis Hunter.
Mm-hmm.
But he sucked here. Oh, yeah, I forgot
we had Revis.
Yeah, I know. Nuts, right?
Wow.
One of the dumbest trades the Bucks ever did. I cringed.
Mind blown. But yeah, guy can cover in the slot, go back and can tackle, hard hitter, and makes picks, I'm there. Coached up by Mark Stoops. And guess who coached LaMarcus Joyner? Guess who coached Terrence Brooks, another NFL safety? Guess who coached P.J. Williams in Derby? P.J. Williams in his first year? Stoops. Stoops is a phenomenal defensive coach. And I love the Mike Edwards pick. If Jamel Dean, if he can get consistent, that he is going to be a monster. Because now he can bump and run. Because he has the speed to catch up. And that is big with DBs. Because if you can get physical and beat him off the line, that's perfect. But it's all going to be crossing patterns. That's what kills the Bucks middle of the field. So overall, I'm not one of these grade people. I wrote an article at the Bucks draft. I don't grade because I need to see coaching and development. You can recognize need, and we drafted, and we go to the bottom. We drafted 3 defensive backs for the second straight season. Recognize a weakness, attack it. Now we have abundance of options. We still have Vernon Hargraves who can play the slot, but most of the DBs we are drafting are tall, athletic freaks. We need to retire that word freaks because I feel like that's a derogatory. I feel like that's just a weird thing. They're just tall, athletic human beings. And let's hope that they can pan out. So after that, we went round 4. Anthony Nelson, defensive end / linebacker out of Iowa. I think this was the Bucks' best pick of the draft.
Really?
High motor, makes plays, very diverse skill set rushing the passer. went to Iowa, so you know he's very well coached. You watch Big Ten football more than me, but I was watching this guy. I'm like, this guy fell to the fourth round, 107 overall. I like this. Looking at draft people, they all said this was our best. This is our steal, our best pick outside of Devin White, and I love this pick because we need defensive. We obviously need defensive line help, and this guy can play inside, can play outside, and we need to continue with high motor players. So hopefully he pans out because I love this as a fourth round pick.
I'll just speak to like you said, I do watch a lot of Big Ten football. Iowa's not my favorite team, but I do respect the type of pros that they put out. They had two first-round tight ends, George Kittle's an Iowa grad and is arguably the top five, top three tight end. The boys there are strong. Iowa has great O-linemen year in, year out.
Farm boys, baby.
Exactly. And so he's going up against really solid competition in practice against that O-line. And like you said, they're very well coached. That's what they do best. That's why they get drafted, is because they are very well coached. They're very, like, cognizantly and on a mental standpoint, they're very sound in their responsibility. They understand the game of football more so than some other schools that might, at least to me, it seems that they understand the game of football and the implications of what's going on each down and what they're reading and why they're doing it, other than just being athletic freaks like you see sometimes, honestly, at like schools such as LSU, where you just see guys fly into the ball because they have awesome instincts and they're crazy athletic. But Iowa just gets it. Iowa's one of the most consistent teams in the country, and they will almost always have 8 wins. And depending on schedule and the type of talent that they have at quarterback, they can get all the way up to 11, 12 wins. So like you said, I think this is a great pick, especially when we're trying to transition to a more of a 3-4 style. Like I said, 3-4-4-3 is kind of more outdated because every team runs nickel as their base. But if you're trying to run an odd front where you can have 3 down linemen, 4 linebackers up, or 3 down linemen, 3 linebackers up, and five DBs, he's a great guy to put one-on-one against a tackle because he's 6'7", 271, so he's tall, he has length, he is strong. He's not going to kill you with like his speed rush by any means, but technically sound and going to get the job done. So if everyone else is saying that this is a steal, I was actually very surprised when I saw this pick come across. I was like, wow, he's still, like you said, I was like, hey, he's still on the board. But yeah, very solid pick. And this might have been your favorite pick, but I'm just going to go ahead and jump into it.
Oh, God, we did it again. We did it again.
What?
Are you going to the kicker?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
I'm curious to hear your thoughts, because I think we are on polar opposite ends of this.
I'm okay with, I mean, would he have been there in the sixth or seventh round? That's one big thing I'm asking. And the other thing is, if he pans out, that's great. He was automatic from 40 to 49 yards, and he missed 10 of 16 from 50-plus yards, and I think 3 of those are blocked. He's 25 years old. I'm pretty sure he's a member of the Church of the Latter-day Saints. Pretty sure that's what Mormons are called. That's what they practice. You know more about them than me. See, South Park taught me that. And so he's experienced. But did he have any big kicks for Utah? That's one thing. And the next thing is he automatic, as you would think? I know Utah has some of the best special teams over the past couple years because of Gay and their punter. But is this guy going to solve our kicking woes in your opinion? You sounds like you think he will.
I think so. I watched a lot. I have two of my best friends go to Utah, and it disappoints me that I watch more Utah football than they do.
I love Utah football, man. I love their coach. What's his name? Witherspoon. Like Cunningham?
Kyle Whittingham.
Whittingham. I knew it was a combination of those two. They're a big Samoan team.
Yes, they get a lot of Samoans. A lot of those Polynesian guys are actually Mormon.
Yeah.
And it helps.
Like your boy Monte Teo.
But oh man, what a time in the NFL that was, in college football that was. But you know, I watched a lot of. He punted for them, I'm pretty sure as well. And he was the Lou Groza Award winner, not 2018, but the year before.
Yeah, he was a finalist last year, but 2017 winner.
I'm excited about this because he has the leg strength that you would want to be able to kick those, to get the kicks that we need done. And I read he was not expecting to get picked at this point. He said when he saw the 813 area code, he was shocked. He was like, there's no way that this is happening right now. But hey, it happened.
Mm-hmm.
But he was always their most clutch guy. And I'm just going to pull up because for him, this is what it was. Utah football had a great, pretty much always has a really solid defense. That's what they pride themselves off. They get really solid defense. They shorten the game with their run game, and they have good special teams.
I loved Devontae Booker when he was there.
And he, I'm just reading a little bit here. Yeah, so he kicked for him. Has a huge leg, but he was always Utah did not score a lot of touchdowns this year. Did not score a lot of touchdowns this year. I'm looking at his NFL.com. Strengths and weaknesses. I didn't know this. He made a 62-yarder in their red and white spring game.
Mm.
Gotta
love those kicks where there's no one rushing you.
He's connected 72% of his kicks from 50-plus while at Utah. So he's just almost 3-for-4 from 50-plus. He had the best field goal percentage above expected in the nation at 5.6%. So what that means is the probability of him, like, before he kicks it, like, what the probability of him making it, he was 5.6 above that projection. And 71% of his kickoffs went for touchbacks. The only issue, like you said, are those blocks. Because sometimes he does get the ball a little too low, but I was reading an interview with him. He has never had a kicking coach before because college football staffs are limited to how much staffing they can have, how much paid staffing they can have.
Yeah.
And I was reading.
The special teams, for context, special teams coach is usually like when I was there, it was Charles Kelly, the linebackers coach, and then Jay Graham, the running backs coach, not kicking specialist.
Exactly. And even this year at FSU, There was no one. There was one guy who oversaw the special teamers, but in terms of him actually coaching them and doing anything of that nature, there were none. That was unheard of. I never saw a single thing. They kind of ran their own practice, essentially.
Yeah, I'm not going to talk about what special teamers did when I was there.
Sounds good. But he said that he's never had a one-on-one kicking coach before, and the Bucks have so much staff. They've hired so many coaches because I don't think there's a limit to how many coaches you can have.
Mm-mm.
Or at least how many paid assistants in some capacity you can have in the NFL. Like what you can pay and what you're willing to pony up is what you're willing to pony up. You got to pay them, and you're paying the highest price because you're at the professional level, but it is what it is. And he said it's going to be great being able to work with someone one-on-one and be able to and I guess it's a former NFL kicker. I don't remember his name.
Let me look it
up.
If you don't mind looking that up for me. I got you. Bucks
and
kicking coach.
And so it's going to be interesting to have someone that's going to give me feedback, that's going to be going through all those emotions, all those feedbacks with me while I'm practicing vying for a spot. And I saw another quote from whoever the coach is Once you get the name, I saw on Twitter that he said,
"Bro, we got Antoine Randall-El. Sorry to interrupt you.
Oh, really?
Oh, dude, our staff. You weren't kidding. Our staff is crazy.
It's loaded, bro. We even have a female on staff, which is great. She's an assistant D-line coach, which is sweet.
Assistant strength and conditioning coach, Marl Java Defar. I don't want to hope they didn't botch that. We have an assistant special teams coach. We have two of them. Cody Grimm and Amos Jones. Dude, our staff has Larry Foote, the former Pittsburgh linebacker. We got... I love seeing Bowles and Byron Leftwich and Harold Goodwin, though. That's awesome. And Bruce Arians rocking his little kangaroo hat. All right, was I looking up? I looked up Buckskin Coach and didn't look at him. You keep going. I'll interrupt you if I find it.
But like I said, you know, he's going to have that feedback from someone that's actually been in those situations. As the kicking coach, he's going to have someone that's been there, done that. And while maybe Matt Gay doesn't have, you know, those clutch kicks that you would like to see or anything like that, he was efficient and he got it done. You know, I'm reading his player bio. He tried to walk on it. He tried to walk on at BYU. BYU didn't want him. He went on a 2-year mission. He played soccer at Utah Valley in 2014-2016, and then walked on at Utah, and then before the 2017 year, and then that year he won the Lou Groza Award, and he hit all 40 of his extra points, connected on a nation-leading 30 of 34 field goals, 88.2% was fifth best in college football, and hit 5 of 6 tries from 50-plus, including a long of 56. I'm excited about this. I cringed. I was like, I wanted, when we drafted Aguayo, I wanted Aguayo, but like everyone else said, why would you draft a kicker in the second round? And it was just too much hype. But they're preaching to this to their special teamers, one kick at a time. Just worry about going one for one. Just worry about going one for one. It doesn't matter. You're not competing against each other. You're competing against yourself. It's like golf. You're trying to go one for one. And you can only eliminate yourself. No one can necessarily outperform you other than you underperforming yourself. Go one for one. Do what you got to do. Move on to the next kick. And he's a big boy. He's listed at 6'2", 232. So he's not just some small kicker. So he has a whole lot of power behind him. I don't want to say that he's going to be, you know, I always think Sebastian Janikowski, he's done in the NFL.
Retired. But
congratulations on a great career.
C-Cow.
But another guy who had a huge leg, but as the tail end of his season came along, he struggled with accuracy. And I'm not saying that Matt Gay is going to be replacing him, but I have this kind of theory in that the universe has to fulfill its quota and has to fulfill the roles that are left in it to keep its equilibrium. And with Sebastian Janikowski out, potentially we could have Matt Gay, who's also a bigger kicker. I'm actually going to look up Janikowski's Sebastian Janikowski.
The thing is the Aguayo taste going to be taken out of our mouth? Is that terrible taste that's lingered? Is the kicking curse? We've had 10 kickers since we cut Matt Bryant. 10. Once you find one, you're set for 10 to 15 years. Which is why Justin Tucker just got a 4-year deal with the richest kicker ever.
We don't even
want the greatest kicker in the world. We just want a guy who can make consistent extra points and will not kick us out of the game. That's it. If Matt Gay's the guy, perfect. If he's not, Jason Licks going to be fired anyway, if we have a bad season again. So take Matt Gay with you and just let it go.
I'm excited. I hit up my I hit on my best friend Zach as soon as I saw that, and I go, this is a great pick. This is gonna pan out well. I think another thing that's gonna help is Aguayo was so young when he came out, and hadn't really dealt with a whole lot of adversity. But Matt Gay has, you know, I hate to say it, but he's gone on a 2-year mission, and those missions are not easy by any means. He tried to walk on at BYU, didn't, was a walk on at Utah, and then ended up being bet on himself more so than anyone else, and was the Lou Groza Award winner. I think he has a good head on his shoulders. I think he's not going to be caught up in the being too much in the limelight, and I think he only has a chance to get better because he has all the tools that you would want as a kicker. And I know a lot of people aren't happy with it because of our kicking history, and especially with Aguayo and everything, but I'm excited.
All right.
I'm personally really excited. Right. I could be totally wrong, but
we'll see. The beauty of all this, man, is we'll see.
I'm optimistic.
All right.
Let's just hope he doesn't miss his first kick like Aguayo did. I hope after that he was cursed.
I hope we don't even kick him in preseason. I don't remember the last time I watched a Buccaneers kick. I'm like, nope, not watching it. But finish his draft. We got a speedster from Bowling Green in round 6, number 28 overall, and Scott Miller from Bowling Green. Sure, it's cool. And then in round 7, we drafted Terry Beckner Jr. of D-Tech from Mizzou. Mizzou has produced great defensive linemen, but that's thing of the past. So, like the draft, address defensive special teams, offense go. One thing is running back. We did not draft the running back. I saw Brian Levich had a quote today that he said he likes Peyton Barber a lot, makes the right cut, makes the right read, all that stuff. Ronald Jones Jr., let's hope, man. You and I bought the Ronald Jones stock the second we drafted him. I hope he builds up. So, very quickly, what are your thoughts on the Bucs not drafting a running back? Would you rather have them gone running back instead of the Miller pick from Bowling Green in round 6? Although there may not have been that many great running backs at that point.
Let me see what other... Who was taken? I have this pulled up. Let's see. Rodney Anderson was drafted out of Oklahoma. Was drafted 4 picks later. Wouldn't rather have him. And then, in terms of 7th round running backs, Mike Weber. Nah. Maybe Kareth White Jr., the FAU guy. Small, quick, speedy guy who's essentially like an insurance policy to Tariq Cohen, in my opinion. Miles Gaskin, maybe, but I don't really think he adds a whole new element to that running back room. No, I'm cool with it. And I was as big of a Ronald Jones fan coming out, and he was the guy that I wanted in the second round last year, and it's who we got. And like I've said before, it was a tough situation for him moving from all the way from California to here. He's a young guy, had to learn how to be on his own all over again in the NFL, had to learn how to be a professional, and I think it was tough on him. But if he can learn from it and improve from it, and it seems as if he's going to have the support, especially with a new coaching staff, like we said with Rosen, you don't always get a second opportunity to make a first impression, and that's exactly what he has this year. So it's the best possible thing moving forward for Ronald Jones. Peyton Barber has been a solid running back for us over the past couple years, and hopefully our offensive line and our run game can kind of pick it up a little bit to allow those holes to be a little bit open. And if they can be a good 1-2 punch between the two of them, and Ronald Jones can kind of get over his yips that he had from last year, I don't think this offense needs a highlighted running back. Not when you have Mike Evans on one side, Chris Godwin on another, two phenomenal tight ends. And who's going to be playing that third? Who's going to be playing that third receiver slot?
Probably Sean Perriman.
You got Prichard. You could easily put Mike Evans on one side as the flanker. You could put Prichard as the
outside receiver
Outside receiver stretching the field, and then Chris Godwin in the slot. man. What a match. You talk about two matchup nightmares in the middle of the field. What do you do when you got Chris Godwin on one side and O.J. Howard lined up tight on the other? Where do you defend? What do you do? You can't. You don't need a stellar running back. Not if Jameis can make a right decision and get his footwork underneath of him and make sure he's processing things properly. He has all the talent to make, like I've said, make any throw in the NFL from the worst to the best, but...
Stop. I can't take it anymore.
I know. I'm right there with you, bro.
All right. So let's keep the running back possession, running back going, because there were plenty that you and I both love in this draft. So we already talked about Bama's own Josh Jacobs. Went to Oakland. Love that pick. Next running back off the board, Miles Sanders to Philadelphia. Then it went our boy Darrell Henderson to the Rams, perfect for that zone scheme. Which, you know what it's, you know what it says in the right. The Bucks forfeited that pick.
That's the only thing that makes me sad.
I know. And then David Montgomery, my favorite running back, went from Iowa State, went to the Bears. Devin Singletary to the Bills immediately afterwards. God, I love the Bills. We need to do a full Bills podcast next. Damien Harris from Alabama to the Patriots, the guy who, you know, played ahead of Josh Jacobs. So all of these, then Alexander Mattison from the Vikings, that was very funny. I don't think Bryce Love to Washington. Justice Hill to Baltimore, love that pick. And just stuff like that. So out of all of those, we have 5 minutes tops left. Which rank your favorite out of those five? Darrell Henderson, Miles Sanders, Darrell Henderson, David Montgomery, Devin Singletary, and Damien Harris. What are your favorite five of those in terms of match, in terms of where they were drafted?
I
feel like we agree at the top with Darrell Henderson.
Yes, I just don't know. He's my favorite. Even if I don't get Todd Gurley in fantasy this year, I am drafting him and literally just storing him because Todd Gurley, history of injuries. And I'm just keeping him until maybe the Big Bear goes down and then they got a plug that's going to be right on path of where they want it to be.
The zone scheme, especially a home run hitter, beautiful.
Oh, it makes me dance in my chair. I'd probably go there. I'd say Miles Sanders to Philly is about, they need the athleticism there, and they finally got it. I really like that one.
I love all the running backs. They have.
I know. Ooh, I love this running back class.
Jordan. No, Philly has Jordan Howard, Miles Sanders. They still have Jamal Adams, a guy I loved from Notre Dame who played well. Wendell Smallwood, I think, still in the books. Like, they have a lot of things. But continue with your with number Trace.
I'd probably say Singletary would probably be my third favorite, because he's going to hide behind that Buffalo O-line and just find – what Matt Waldman said about Singletary is everything that he doesn't have great speed, doesn't have great athlete, does not have great anything, but he does everything pretty solid. But his best attribute is he slow plays linebackers that can't see him, and then he shoots through the hole. This dude has the best vision in this draft.
Guess who he's playing behind too? Probably a direct comp. Frank Gore.
Oh, Frank Gore. Exact. Oh, man. So I'm so excited to see what he can do and what he can learn from Frank Gore. And I'm so excited for Buffalo. And
say it again, man. Look, they're probably going to cut Shady McCoy because they have Alfred Blue. No, they have TJ Yeldon, Frank Gore, and now Devin Singletary. I'm so glad you're on the Bills bandwagon now. Number four, you have Montgomery. Yes.
Montgomery to the Bears is exactly what they wanted and exactly what they needed. In my opinion, you took exactly what you had in Jordan Howard, and all you did was upgrade on a rookie deal. Phenomenal pick.
Yeah, and then lastly, Damien Harris, a guy who's just a solid running back. I like New England running back stables. I think your boy Sexy Rexy Burkhead, I think he's too injury prone. James White is literally the perfect Patriot running back. Literally a PPR god in fantasy. Sony Michel went healthy, solid. But now you have Damien Harris, a guy who can do it all. Very high ball security. Just love that pick. And then, I mean, It's just, this was a very, not dominant running back class, but a very niche running back class. If Bryce Love hits for the Redskins, you have Geis and Love. Justice Hill, man, thank you, Baltimore. You got Boykin. You got in the first round. Who'd they draft? Not A.J. Brown. They got Hollywood Brown. Now they get Justice Hill, a dude all running back, to go with Mark Ingram. I can't wait for them. So, yeah, that's all the time we got for today. I mean, Benny Snell Jr. going to Pittsburgh's funny. That's all we got time for today. Very quickly, Eagles getting DK, I mean, Seahawks getting DK Metcalf is awesome. I'll leave it on that. Roll through another hour, Noah. Another hour. Your finals are done. You're relaxed. Next week will probably be a very relaxing podcast for you, for me. New job starting soon for me. I'm going to be on the golf course way too much. But hey, there's no such thing as more golf. So Noah, thank you for hopping on. Congratulations on another Dean's List semester for you. Enjoy your time off.
Thank you.
Enjoy your summer.
Will do. Thanks for having me back on the No Ordinary Podcast.
Yes. And everyone, keep watching Game of Thrones, because there's a 96% chance we talk Thrones over the next 3 weeks when things get dire. I haven't talked any basketball yet, just a lot of football. But hey, everyone, have a good weekend, and thanks for checking us out on the No Ordinary Pod on the Radio St. Pete Network.